food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, June 15th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well. Gold today. Let's take a look at the markets today. Right off the bat, we have gold up $5.20, $5.20 for gold, $11.87. Silver had a nice little pop, but came off its high, 1620, up 15 cents. Platinum is down 7 at 1,091. Palladium down 3 at 737. USDX today is down 0.13 at 94.79. Crude oil was off below 60 level, 59.62, down 34. And the market's pressure was heavier in the morning. They were able to bring it back somewhat, down 107 points at 17,791. The NASDAQ was down 21 at 5,029. And the S&P was down 9 at 2,084. 10-year yield, 2.36. Friday, I believe it was 2.39, so down a little bit there. Euro's up 0.22 at 1.13. And all the European markets were down, of course. We'll be talking about that a little bit more in length, about the Greece. Hong Kong was down about 1.5%. Germany was down almost 2%. London was down just a little over 1%. And certainly we have the Greece situation, and we'll be talking about that. But there was also some discouraging data on U.S. manufacturing. That didn't help today. And you had the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's Empire State Manufacturing Index fell to negative 2 this month. And any readings below 0, of course, indicate a contraction. The latest reading is another sign that manufacturers are likely still held back by a strong dollar and cutbacks in the investment in oil and gas drillers. But builders, U.S. home builders, their report came out as far as a gauge of the U.S. home builders' confidence in their sales prospects. That surged this month to the highest levels in September. And the National Association of Home Builders, Wells Fargo, their sentiment index climbed to 59 this month, up 5 points from the 54 May reading. And most of your home builders, of course, their shares all went higher on the day. I already talked about the European markets. And it was interesting. I heard a part of the interview with Donald Trump. I guess he makes his announcement tomorrow, some sort of announcement tomorrow for his run for president. And, you know, he took me by surprise. Because, you know, he was talking about the TPP, he was against it, and he was talking about what Japan is doing, about the way they buy the currencies, then they loan it back to us. And, I mean, I was surprised to some degree that he kind of knew what the details were, what the devil in the details were, and what little he released. And, you know, he certainly is strongly against lobbyists, and... you know, so it'll be interesting to see what his little deal is when he makes his announcement tomorrow. I guess...
You know, it'll kill his campaign, don't you?
Hmm. What?
If they get a picture of him without his hair weave on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everybody likes his wife. You know, she's a very attractive woman. And, of course, you know, much, you know, she'll probably be another Jackie Onassis. She's that type of a... You know, what she kind of reminds me of. The only problem I have with Donald Trump is, you know, Chris Christie is his friend. And, you know, he always sticks up his, he always backs up his friends, whether they're right or whether they're wrong. So, you know.
Yeah, within certain groups, loyalty is highly valued.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate. But, you know, it's difficult to make your way in the world as a loner.
True.
The truth of the matter is you go to Africa and the apex predators are lions and they hunt in packs. And you go out into the ocean and the apex predators are killer whales and they hunt in packs. All right? And there's a lesson here, even though it may not be quite fair to make the comparison, but there's something to be said. People tend to prosper more when they work with groups. And the problem with that loyalty is that there's a lot to be said about working with the group, but at the same time, that loyalty to the group will almost certainly put you in positions where you have to make some serious compromises. And it may be, it's like being in a gang. And to some degree, you know, rich people, that's the way they operate. They operate in gangs. They're not that different from the Bloods and the Crips. They have a little better clothes, and they live in better homes and the rest of that sort of thing. But that gang mentality is common to people who tend to prosper. And they have an us-against-them mentality, and they, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I wish everybody could be essentially independent. But there's a natural thing in life, and I'm not recommending it, but I recognize it. You got to join the right gang if you want to get rich.
And just to touch on this a little bit today, the House Majority Leader said today that Congress must find a way to pass this trade agenda that Barack Obama has. And he said he acknowledged that there's no obvious pathway.
Said this?
This is the House Majority Leader. On Monday, Republican Representative Kevin McCarthy of California told reporters there are many different options to revive the trade package. He said a new vote could come as early as this week, but Republican leaders must first survey the political and legislative landscape. Yeah, let's see if we can get this passed first and do what we have to do to get the right numbers before we... I mean, it really is kind of bizarre. I mean, but
you know, one of the things that gets me about this Trans-Pacific Partnership, Obama came to office saying he was going to provide the most transparent administration ever. And I think one of the reasons why people are opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership is because they've made it their business to try to negotiate the deal and even get the deal passed and enacted without letting the public understand what's going on. Right? Much like Obamacare, which has turned out to be something of a farce. And the Patriot Act, right? And a host of other legislation. Nobody bothers to read this stuff before they vote for it. And then the public winds up saddled with these laws, and they are onerous, oppressive, stupid, contrary to our interest. And when the government tries to run one of these little schemes like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and they say, oh, but we're going to do this all in secret, so all the idiots out there in TV and radio land don't find out what we're up to. Well, it automatically just, a lot of people just say, I don't know what you're doing, I don't know what's going on, but if you're not going to show us in advance, we're not going to support it. We want to know what we're getting into. We want to know what you people in Washington are trying to do to us. And there's no way that the secrecy that surrounds the Trans-Pacific Partnership is intended to conceal the great benefits that partnership will provide for the vast majority of the American people. If they were doing good deeds, they don't need to do them in secret. The fact that they're operating in secret is good evidence that they're trying to pull a stunt, and the people naturally say, to heck with that, we don't want it. So they're going to have a problem here. The most transparent administration in the world or in American history is going to have to release it. If you people in Washington think this is such a good deal, show us. They say, oh, no, we can't show you. It's a great deal. Trust us. Oh, yeah, it'll be a great deal. Trust us, but we're not going to let you read it because, well, you people wouldn't understand. Yeah, well, then you aren't going to get it passed.
Well, it's funny, the argument. Obama says that, oh, we must get our products out to these other countries. Well, you know, one of these countries, you have Canada and Mexico in the TPP partnership. And, well, we already have an agreement with Canada and Mexico with NAFTA. What products is Vietnam going to be? And maybe these countries are much bigger than I believe, but Malaysia, Vietnam, you know, some of these other countries, certainly Japan, you have an aging population in Japan. What are they going to be buying? I mean, they have their own problems.
Diapers.
Maybe.
Well, that's no,
but you,
know,
you have Australia.
Diapers in Japan than they do children's diapers.
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
We have Australia. We have Brunei and this Chile. So, I mean, you know, how much are we actually going to be selling and trading with these countries?
I think the real reason for this is to try to set up some sort of a trading block.
Agreed.
To compete with China.
Absolutely.
I think that's a real we're trying to set something up a little bit like NATO, except on a commercial basis, and trying to surround China with some sort of a, I don't know, some sort of an arrangement where we have allies. I think it's all stupid. You know, but who can say? We don't really know what's in it, or I certainly don't know what's in it. I don't believe anybody else out in public has full understanding of what's going on in that treaty. If it were really good for the American people, somebody in Washington should be taking credit and say, look what I'm doing for you.
Mm-hmm. All right? You do with everything else.
Uh-huh. If so far as nobody's trying to take credit for this and just, oh, trust me, it'll be great. You'll love it.
Just like Obamacare.
Yeah, I know.
How great was that?
Well, still
everybody
there.
And their brother who has a job and pays for their insurance, their insurance has gone up. But yet you have Medicare. Those programs are, you know, stretching to the other side of the stratosphere because of the number of people that are getting on there that didn't have insurance. They couldn't have, now we, you know, those programs are growing. Taxpayers are paying for it. Our insurance costs are going up because of that. I mean, it's just absolutely insane.
I know.
Absolutely insane.
And what they're really trying to do, from my perspective, is ensure that the people in this country already have who already have more money than they need, meaning the upper 1% or even one upper tenth of a percent, can make even more money. Right? And that's ultimately, from my perspective, guessing. I haven't seen the trade. I haven't seen the Trans-Pacific Partnership document, but I'm guessing the top 1% or one tenth of a percent. Yeah, they're going to make money off this deal.
Absolutely.
And the rest of us are going to have a problem. Frank, our producer, he sent us an instant message here, and he says, and the retrain, one of the points about the Trans-Pacific, one of the things that we apparently know, is that it has a retraining provision.
Yep.
For those people who lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Oh, great. Great. You've got a job making something, and thanks to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you're going to lose your job. They know that. You're going to lose your job. but not to worry, because the government will retrain you to do something. Like what? Shovel snow in the wintertime? You know, bale hay in the summertime? What? What are you going to do?
Well, that's a program that the Democrats were for. I mean, they've been pushing for that all along. So for them to kill the bill and turn back against the program that they wanted, it's really kind of, it's so surprising that the Democrats did that. And, you know, so, I mean, I think they're doing it mainly for their election.
Oh, I, no doubt.
You know, for, you know, because, I mean, because it's totally reversed.
I know.
You know, it's totally
reversed. I understand,
reversed.
But they're not doing it for the benefit of the American people.
Absolutely not.
They're just doing it because they're politically.
But that was programmed.
There are enough people that are angry about it, and they're saying, we better do what they say or they're going to throw us out of office.
But paying for the retraining actually was a Democrat, you know, baby that they really wanted to. So to have them turn their back on it, it's interesting.
I understand. It's interesting. It's amazing.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. You know, you look at some of this stuff and we laugh about it. At times we make jokes about it. But the truth of the matter is, it's just evidence of a government. You know, in the Constitution of the United States, it says at the beginning, at the opening of it, let me read it here if I can just find the, it says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. They are to promote the general welfare, all right, under the Constitution. That means they're supposed to be passing laws that are good for just about everybody. They're not supposed to be passing laws for special interests that are bad for the general welfare, but are great for the special interests who give the congressmen and the senators and presidents cash. They call it, political campaign contributions, but it's nothing more than bribes. We need to work on the general welfare of the people of the United States of America rather than special interests. And until that happens, we're going to have a problem. And programs like this are going to sit here and ridicule and make fun of the government.
Do you realize, though, how long these talks with the DPP have been going on?
No, I don't. But I would let year and a half, 2 years.
How about 2008? This is when they first entered into talks with various countries and sign up under Bush. You know, once Barack Obama came into office, you know, they a lot of these negotiations were put off and so forth. They were probably more concerned about trying to keep our system from falling than anything else. But so, I mean, these talks have been going on for a very long time. And so when something like that, you have these countries that have joined these negotiations, yeah, it's just a matter of it's going to get done. There's no one that's going to stop it. Yes,
I don't know about that. We'll watch and see. But if it gets done, we're going to see a bunch of congressmen, perhaps Democrats in particular. I mean, I don't think they can take another hit. Insofar as they are deemed to be the ones that have really saved us from the Trans-Pacific Partnership so far, not the Republicans, the Democrats. They're the ones that resisted this thing. They're also going to take responsibility if this goes south and the Trans-Pacific Partnership is passed, enacted, and goes into place. Democrats are going to take the blame on this thing, or there's a good chance that they will. And I don't think they want to take that risk. Didn't they have enough trouble in the last election? Or they shouldn't be looking for trouble in the next?
Yeah, but you know what? People have such short memories. And you know what? In the next election is a huge presidential election, so people will be so sidetracked and focus on that. It'll be dropped.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see, but no. You never know for an absolute fact. We'll watch and see. It's at least a possibility that the politicians are afraid of losing their jobs, and therefore they might even be on their good behavior. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back in a minute.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, before we head out of the TPP, we have Jim from West Virginia calling us. Good afternoon, Jim.
Oh, how do you do? You guys do good. I can tell you that much, but I hope you know you're doing good. Alfred, your knowledge of laws and words eclipses what I will ever know, okay?
I doubt that's entirely true, but I'm kind of like an idiot savant. I know a few things about some things and a lot of things I probably don't know enough about.
Well, you're miles ahead of me, put it that way. I'm an economics guy, but at any rate, long ago, late 80s, early 90s, there was an attorney who was up in his 80s and hadn't been in the courtroom for years and years. And he was talking about all the fraud. He says, listen, if some so-called law starts out in the House of Representatives as an H.R., not an H.B., H.R., the R and B look a lot alike if you just glance at them in the capital letter, right? He said, and the House passes it, and the Senate passes it, and the President signs it, is it a law? I said, yeah. He said, no, it's a resolution. It only binds the House and the Senate and the President. It doesn't bind the rest of us.
Well, here's the deal. Let me tell you something here that I think is going on. I will strongly suspect, I can't prove it, but I strongly suspect if they pass a law, it applies within the states of the Union under Article 1, which is the limited powers of government. But if they pass a resolution, they can pass any resolution they want, and it's valid within the territories and districts of the United States. Washington, D.C., Guam, Puerto Rico, the rest of that. They are running a double system here, and we see a lot of things. They say, oh, that's a law. It's the law where? When anyone tells you it's the law, anything is the law. The next question, the law where? Within the borders of the state of Texas or in some territory? Is it the law within the states of the Union or within Puerto Rico, Guam, or whatever? And they are deceiving people by passing laws that are constitutional under Article 4, Section 3, Clause 2, the Constitution of the United States. It says the government, the Congress, has exclusive legislation over the territories and districts like Washington, D.C. It's constitutional there. It's not constitutional within the states of the Union. Where are you? Where does your law apply? Now, I can't tell you that's God's truth, but I've looked at this for a long time, and that's not I'm not the only one who believes that, and that idea has been going around for 10, 15 years, and I think it's probably valid.
You see, I told you you knew more than I did.
I know a little bit about the law. Well, I suspect what I know and what I know you can fit in my wallet, what I suspect you can fit, you know, it'll fill a barn. What do you know and what you can prove are two different things. But
well, there's something else which a lot of people don't seem to be aware of. Somebody said, it's the law, you got to do this. A mandate, a code means evidence of law, for instance. A decision, a directive, a statute, an ordinance, any one of a number of these different things. They're not laws, folks. They are not laws. Now, I'm desperately trying to grasp for straws of hope, and I'm finding very few of them. But I have a sneaking suspicion that if enough people are aware of the fact that their county sheriff can chase out the EPA, you know, look them up, they're a private corporation, if people will understand that the, back to the TPP, which caused me to jump in this thing, it is not a treaty. It effectively looks like a treaty, but it's not labeled a treaty, so that doesn't bind us. It's an agreement between bankrupt corporations that masquerade as governments.
Yeah.
So it's very easy just to say, no, it don't count. And folks, there's one thing about, I want to mention two things. Once again, I'm going to defer to Alfred. Please defer to Alfred, because I don't know where I am too much on this. There's a corpus juris secundum, if I remember correctly. It's kind of like a Bible of sorts for the legal business.
It's like an encyclopedia. It contains something like 140, 150 volumes, if I understand correctly. I've seen it. I don't know how many volumes, but it's a monster. Right? You're not going to pick it up all by yourself at one in one lift. It's a big set of books. Go ahead.
But at any rate, somewhere in there it says something to the effect of de facto and de jure. Now, de jure means of law, de facto means basically acting as. So eventually I'm hoping and praying that the de facto corporations will have to step down, because they're bankrupt anyway. And remember, a bankrupt corporation has no standing in court. And hopefully we may get some of our local government back in place. I'm also saying little prayers that everybody will look into Dun and Bradstreet and find out how much of fraud it is. Their courts are courts not engaged in justice. They're engaged in making money.
Business.
And the judge is a manager in this corporation, and the attorneys are officers in the corporation, and they must answer to the people who own the corporation. Just like our political parties are corporations. Republicans, 1860, I can't remember the details on the Democrats. I can't remember anything anymore. But it's rumored that George Soros owns controlling interests in both of those corporations, and corporations must do what the stockholders tell them, not their customers, us little people.
So must employees. So must employees. Every employee has a fiduciary obligation to do what's best for his employer. Now, when you hire a police department that's working for a private corporation, rather than acting in public, the police officer's obligation are not to support and defend the people, because they're no longer the employer of the police department. Their legal obligation is do what's best, support and defend the corporation that employs them. And it makes an enormous difference. Part of the reason, well, they'll shoot you. You're not the employer. You're not one of the employers. Right, and you come up and say, you got to do something to help me because I'm one of the people. I said, bang, bang, buzz off, baby. All I got to do is take care of my employer, and that's law. If they were working for the people, how would they get paid, Jim?
IMF.
Well, if they were working for the people, they'd be paid in the people's money, which is gold and silver under Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1.
Now, Alfred, the key to education is repetition. And you do good at bringing up many things over and over again, thank God. But if you know all this stuff, what I'd really like to know is why are you denying us the privilege of all this which you have? Because after
I
the federal government...
Blog. I've got 1,700 articles up on my blog. Right, I've been writing it as much as I can and trying to get it out. And if people want to read it, it's free. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to give me your name, address, or anything else. The information is there if you care to read it.
Man, I'm grinning ear to ear. Okay. And you need to bring out more of it in the radio program, in my never very humble opinion.
Well,
but all I'm saying is that we need to prepare for after the collapse, because no government has survived intact the collapse of its currency. And that's on its way slow, fast, marked by apocalyptic events or not. I don't know. But we need to start preparing for what comes after. And, Alfred, you are a source of a great deal more information than you let on in the radio show. And I'm wanting the customers, the audience.
There's some things that aren't appropriate kind of for this forum. You know, there's some things, like I say, there's a lot of things that I suspect. And I've been looking at this for now 33 years. Intensely, not casually, intensely. But I've come to some conclusions that a lot of people would think are, they said, well, that can't be, that's not right. And they may be correct. Perhaps some of my conclusions are mistaken. But I've also stopped the Attorney General of Texas when he tried to sue me for $25,000 a day. And they had invested six years and nearly $500,000 in pretrial investigations, pretrial hearing. I was one of seven defendants. The other six were added before me. I was the last one added. They came after us, $9 million a year. I read the relevant law and realized that drugs, the definition of drugs, only relates to animals, not to men and women made in God's image. I had drafted a freedom of religion defense that they'd never seen before. They dropped the case after investing nearly $500,000 in 6 years. They just dropped it. They didn't say goodbye, no cigarette, nothing. They just quit. Right? That's unprecedented, and it's evidence that, you know, if some of my ideas are not valid, a few of them may be. So, in any case, it's available on the blog for anybody who wants to look at it, and just for ADASK, ADASK.wordpress.com. It's all free.
Well, this much I can say, there's an awful lot which you can prove, like that all these different so-called governments are in fact corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Subsidiaries of the United States of America Corporation. Now, these things you can prove.
Yeah.
And I really think we need to be prepping the audience for what comes after. What comes after is going to be real. It'll have to be real government, real materials, real skills, real money, real abilities to perform. Now, your only security in this world is security in the marketplace, is your ability to perform in the marketplace, that you have something real to offer the world. And the world will then buy what you have, and you will survive. And all these people who work for governments, breaks my heart in a million pieces to see anybody suffer, but there's no way you can run a government without a federal, without currency.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alfred, you have a lot more tucked away in that mind than you're letting on during the radio show, and I'd like to encourage you to let a little bit more of it out. Okay? Mm-hmm. Can you do that for us?
I can try from time to time. This program focuses on economics more so than law.
Yeah. Well,
the reality is I probably know, however much I know about economics, I know or suspect a great deal more about the legal system. You know, I ran for the Supreme Court of Texas back in 1992. And that's supposed to be illegal. 1992. That's supposed to be illegal. Constitution of Texas says you have to be a licensed attorney and you have to be a judge in a lower court for at least 10 years before you can run for the Supreme Court. I got on the ballot and received 201,000 votes in 1992 because I found an 1870 federal law which said I could run. And I'm probably the first man since the Civil War to get on the ballot for the Supreme Court of Texas, who was not an attorney or a judge prior to running. So it's to be illegal, but I found a law that said I could do it. That's an accomplishment. I mean, I didn't win. The winner had 4 or 5 million votes. I had 200,000, 201,000. But it was an accomplishment to get on the ballot, and it's evidence that you can look into this stuff, and you can find some very, you can reach some very unusual conclusions. And if you can talk about them properly and advance them properly, you can make very strange things happen. First step, though, is you got to master the language. You have to become adept. I don't mean that I am adept at the language, but you've got to be more than, you've got to be able to do better than talk. You understand? You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
You have to master the language, and if you can do that, you can hold this government at bay. Not always, but high probability.
Well, this much I can say. They use laws, and more than laws, color of law. And
yep.
Look into denial of constitutional rights under color of law. That's a federal mm-hmm. offense. But
mm-hmm.
color of law to rob us economically.
What do they mean by color of law, Jim? Do you know what
Sir?
They mean by color of law?
Please, you tell us. You know better than I.
Well, my
please.
Understanding is this. You talked about de jure and de facto earlier. De jure meaning
yes.
essentially constitutional. And de facto meaning some guy who's running around wearing a suit and he claims to be a police officer, but maybe he's not. Maybe he's not a peace officer of the state of Texas. Maybe he's just a rent-a-cop. Whether he knows it or not, whether you know it or not, if he's not de jure, he's de facto. If he's de facto, he's acting under color of law. He doesn't really have law to back him up and to support his claims of authority. He's just faking it. Huh? Color of law is associated with the de facto.
I am grinning from ear to ear. Just keep it up, buddy. Just let them know. Economics is reality. Politics
mm-hmm.
is rhetoric designed to obscure economic reality.
Mm-hmm.
Politics is simply language designed to make us fight with each other. Y'all carry on the good fight. This is all about right and wrong, folks. It's the devil's currency versus God's money.
Yeah.
Just keep it up. Thank you, bud.
All right, Jim, thank you. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the compliments. Thank you. Melody, what do we got?
I don't know. I must be chopped. I must be chopped liver. But he did make some.
You haven't run for the Supreme Court, have you?
Pardon?
Huh? Not even for Delaware, one of the little states. You know?
I never claimed that I did.
No, I understand.
I never claimed that I did.
That makes a difference. That makes a difference. It gives you a certain amount of credibility and credentials. And
I wasn't questioning your credibility and your credentials. I just said I must be chopped liver. Anyway, we're just got about a few more seconds left of this segment.
And when we come back, we can either talk about Greece or we can talk about Texas. And I've got a story about Texas that, for me at least, I think it might be the most important story I've ever been involved in on this program.
Okay, sounds
interesting. Now, Greece is fun. I like Greece. We could save Texas for tomorrow. But you can choose, Melody. Are we going to do Greece or are we going to do Texas?
All right.
We're going to take a break for some more commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704 775-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And what's next, Melody? Greece or Texas?
Well, you know, we got a Texas man here, so we got to go with Texas.
Right. I tell you, this is a...
But it is interesting. I've seen bits and pieces, but I didn't really know that it was actually signed into law. And it would be interesting to see the law, but...
I'll get to it. I just found this today. I just found reference to it today. But for me, this is probably the single biggest story that I've ever been involved in reporting on this program. This is huge. This brings tears to my eyes. I have lived to see a moment where a State of the Union is beginning to reestablish itself as something other than a flunky subject of the federal government. They're standing up on their hind legs and they're saying, we're going to do this, and we don't care whether you like it or not. Here's the article, and I'll read excerpts from the article, and the headline is, Writings on the Wall. Texas pulls $1 billion in gold from New York Fed, meaning the Federal Reserve, makes it non-confiscatable. There's the headline. Here goes the text. And again, this is from ZeroHedge.com. The lack of faith in central bank and bank trustworthiness is spreading. First Germany, then Holland and Austria. And now Texas has enacted a bill to repatriate $1 billion in gold from the New York Federal Reserve's vaults to a newly established state gold bullion depository. People have this image of Texas being big and powerful, so for a lot of people, this is exactly where they would want to go with their gold. And the bill includes a section to prevent forced seizure from the federal government. Now, I haven't read the bill, but I have no doubt that this is a legitimate article. The bill is there. And if it says... I want to read it myself, but it's at least being interpreted. The bill includes a section to prevent forced seizure from the federal government, meaning, or at least implying, if the federal government comes up to a Texas bullion gold depository and they say, give us the gold, we got the army out here, the implication is that Texas is ready to show up with the Texas militia and say, you better get your butts out of Texas before we send you out in a body bag. This is big, big, big. Article continues. It says the University of Texas's 2011 investment managed company, the second largest U.S. academic endowment, in 2011 took delivery of almost $1 billion in gold bullion that they're storing in a New York vault. All right. Now, that's not, if I'm understanding the article, that's not the gold that's being repatriated, but they've already got a billion up there. And now, Texas Governor, this is 2015, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, signed a bill into law on Friday, June 12th, that was last Friday, that will allow Texas to build a gold and silver bullion depository. In addition, Texas will repatriate $1 billion worth of bullion from the Federal Reserve in New York to the new facility once that facility is completed. All right, it implies The article is not clear, but it implies there's at least $2 billion in Texas gold that's up in New York. $1 billion that's owned by the government of Texas, another $1 billion that's owned by the University of Texas. Representative Giovanni Capriglione, he said, this is the guy who got this bill started, Republican. We are not talking Fort Knox. Right, we're not going to have a bullion depository that's as massive as Fort Knox. But he continues and he says, but when I first announced this, I got so many emails and phone calls from people literally all over the world who said they want to store their gold in a Texas depository. People have this image of Texas as big and powerful, so for a lot of people, this is exactly where they would want to go with their gold. And I'm sitting back and saying, oh my God. Given the choice of storing your gold, ladies and gentlemen, in Switzerland, Hong Kong, Singapore, Canada, or Texas, where would you prefer to store your gold? Not everybody would agree, but a lot of people would say Texas. How many of those foreign gold depositories would fight confiscation by the United States government? When we talk about fighting, Texas just might do that. Your gold might be safe down here in Texas. It's even conceivable that the Texas Gold Depository might be able to give the Shanghai Gold Exchange a run for number one position as the physical gold market. Clearly, the Texas Gold Depository is $1 billion in gold, which could be up to 25 tons, is no match for the 50 tons per week that are traded at the Shanghai Gold Exchange. But on the other hand, China's reputation for honesty and stability is no match for that of Texas. I won't say that the Texas Gold Bullion Depository will lay a foundation to allow Texas to begin to compete with the Shanghai Gold Exchange. But I will say that it might happen. If public distrust of the Federal Reserve's gold storage system grew, people might prefer to store their gold in Texas rather than New York City. In theory, the Texas Gold Depository could compete with the Federal Reserve. This is big. The implications are enormous. Now, where they go with this is in Texas, two big public. I'm going to skim through the article. In Texas, two big public pension funds from the University of Texas and the Teacher Retirement Fund own physical gold worth more than $1 billion. Now, the article doesn't clearly say if the two pension funds together own physical gold worth more than $1 billion, which would translate into 25 tons, or if they each own $1 billion, which would be 25 tons for each, but it implies that the Texas Gold Depository might start out with owning 50 tons of gold, 25 tons from the government, and at least 25 tons from one or both of the big public pension unions. And as an aside, how would you people working on government pensions up in Chicago, how'd you like to find out that your pensions were backed by gold rather than paper? Down here in Texas, at least some of the pensions are backed by gold. Where else? This is based on Article 1. They tell us expressly that, among other things, they say they're not going to be this gold depositor won't be able to lend gold out, and it won't serve as collateral for other transactions of the bank. All right? The bill also includes a provision to prevent seizure, which is important for private parties who want to avoid another 1933 style confiscation of their bullion by federalist authorities. Section A2116.023 of the bill states, a purported confiscation, requisition, seizure, or other attempt to control the ownership is void ab initio and of no force and effect. Effectively, the state of Texas will protect any gold stored in the depository from the federal government. That's not me. That's reading from the article. And free from the threat of confiscation, private citizens can use gold and silver as money, completely bypassing the paper monetary system. Edwin Vieira, who was a well-known constitutional lawyer, He says people can legally do that with gold contracts. The difficulty is in the implementation. Now Texas has set up a mechanism with a depository. We have accounts that the institution in that institution that can easily transfer back and forth to certain amounts. We can run our money system. We can run on a gold or silver basis if we were so inclined. This is just flat out enormous. According to Vieira, the anti-secure provision rests on Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution of the United States, which obliges the states to not make anything tender in payment of debts apart from gold and silver coin. And that's true. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, Constitution of the United States declares that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. The reason we're in, and Melody and I harp on this on a regular basis, is because we have embraced this damnable fiat currency. And the world has set back and said, well, it's a piece of paper, it's got a couple of signatures on it, it must be money. It's not. That's how we have reached the edge of something like an economic, I don't know, collapse, perhaps. A depression collapse, God knows where it's going to go. But we got here riding the back of these fiat currencies, and here comes Texas saying we're going to restore a gold and silver-based currency. I'm telling you, this is the biggest story. It is just astonishing to me that this is happening. I am so proud to be in Texas. I've been here since 1980. I'm not a natural native-born Texan, the rest of it. There's another point down here, but I am proud to see this state take this extraordinary stand. I mean, this is the kind of thing that got Muammar Gaddafi killed. He tried to set up a gold currency in Africa. And what happened to him? He got his head, he got himself killed. Same thing happened with Hussein over in Iraq. He tried to sell his gold for currencies other than fiat dollars. He tried to sell his crude oil, Iraqi crude. We invaded under the pretext of weapons of mass destruction and killed him. And destroyed the country. And here comes Texas, and they're stepping into the same arena. And they're saying, by law, we will fight. We're going to fight to hang on to our gold. We are talking about something. This is Vieira, I believe. We are talking about something completely new in terms of the legal playing field. This is no longer a fringe concept. You know, people like myself and Melody have been talking about the idea of returning to a gold-based currency in this country. We've been talking about it for years, and the chances of it happening have been slim or none. It was one of those things that should happen. Well, we haven't seen it happen. I didn't expect it to happen except under dire circumstances, and here comes Texas. And they say, we're parking $1 billion worth of gold in this depository. All right? You know, if push comes to shove, Texas is going to have a little gold. It might not be an enormous amount just yet, but they are making proviso. And I saw this probably a month ago. They talked about it, and I didn't realize the significance at the time. People like myself will be able to go out to this depository or representatives, agencies of the depository. We'll be able to sell gold if we want to. You want to sell gold coin? Want to send a dozen of them? They'll buy your gold and give you cash or check. It's not clear what you'll get out of this, but they'll buy your gold. And presumably, you'll also, once you establish an account, you'll be able to go in there and you'll be able to give X number of dollars and get some gold coins back. This is an astonishing development. Completely new in terms of the legal system. Here's something from...
Well, is it actually the state going to be buying and selling gold?
Yes.
Because I can't imagine. There's a lot of huge dealers in Texas. And I can't imagine that they would go and the state would start competing with the huge wholesalers and dealers in Texas.
Well, what they're talking about is that you can begin to buy...
Well, I know you can store it there.
You, I know you can store it, but what they're saying is that you will be able to buy and sell with gold and silver within the state of Texas. You'll be able to set up an account where I could set up an account and I could deposit, say, 20 ounces of gold into the account. Then I could do business with other people on the basis of the gold that I have in that account. I can say, oh, I'm going to pay you 5 ounces of gold. And they can say, okay, we're going to give you this used car. Right?
Well, that's not what I was questioning. I was questioning the part where you could deposit it with the, and then buy it back. So it's a, you know, sell it to the state and then buy it back.
The implications are enormous. The implications are enormous, and with clarification remains. We won't have clarification for a while on this. But here's Governor Abbott, Greg Abbott. He issued the following statement. It says, today I signed House Bill 483. To provide a secure facility for the state of Texas, state agencies, and Texas citizens to store gold, bullion, and other precious metals. With the passage of this bill, the Texas Bullion Depository will have become the first state-level facility of its kind in the nation, increasing the security and stability of our gold reserves and keeping taxpayer funds from leaving Texas to pay fees for storing gold in facilities outside of Texas. In other words, the gold is stored currently at the Federal Reserve. Texas pays a fee to store the gold at the Federal Reserve, and they're saying, not anymore. We're going to store it here in Texas. And it says, again, today I signed the bill to provide secure facility for the state of Texas, state agencies, and Texas citizens. Now, that's real interesting to me. And you can read more into it. Maybe Greg Abbott, Governor Abbott, didn't mean precisely what he said, but he's been quoted as saying Texas citizens. What we're talking about here is the possibility that the Texas Gold Bullion Depository will recognize people as citizens of Texas rather than citizens of the United States. And the political implications here are just flat out spectacular, enormous. The article closes down and says, is this the first step down the road to succession or secession? I wouldn't say that's true, but I would say it's a step in the direction we're preparing for, look, big trouble. Got to go our own way. We're going to have our own gold. All right? This is just amazing to me. And lastly, it says this Texas Gold Bullion Depository story sends an ominous signal of rising fears of confiscation and leaves us wondering just how long before every state decides to follow the Texas lead. You know, Germany has tried to get its gold back out of the Federal Reserve. And we've seen Austria and whoever. But who imagined that somebody, some state like Texas, would stand up and say, we're going back to constitutional money. We're going to allow it, gold and silver. It's not to say that we won't be able to use Federal Reserve notes in Texas, at least not for now. But it is saying we are preparing for a time where if we have to, we can work with gold and silver as lawful money once again. I am astonished. I know a lot of people don't understand the significance of this, at least not in the same way I do, but I'm telling you, I am proud. This brings tears to my eyes. We are standing up against this government, and maybe we're going to make an extraordinary difference. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.